talking and just and putting my heart out there a little bit with you guys this morning. This is not a traditional Ken message in that I am going to open scripture. We're going to look at it, but I'm not going to give as much of an exegete or a full study of scripture as I am going to tell you some stories. And I apologize if that's not your thing, but so this is a heads up. This is really like meanderings of your pastor trying to figure this out, all right? And so here's me trying to figure this out with you, because I really believe that we are to be Christ-centered, Spirit-empowered, and mission-focused. And I want to be a mission-focused man, and yet I haven't always got it right, and I've learned different things along the way, and I'm going to continue to learn different things about what it means to be a mission-focused person. And so here's the first thing that you need to know. Sometimes people look at pastors and they figure, well, he's the pastor. Being on mission or living on mission, it's got to be easy for him. And I know that sharing our faith isn't the only part of being mission focused, but it's part of it. And so sometimes you might think, well, it's for a pastor to share his faith, nothing to it, easy, right? So I just want to know, like, nope, it's not. Even for pastors, it's not always easy. In fact, we were just singing, right? And the one line that really got me is, there was two, but there was in the same song, it was like, that I would give the world to tell your story. Would you? I can't say I've always been willing to give the world to tell the story. Or then the next line in the chorus of that same song was, I will go to the ends of the earth, to the ends of the earth, right? Y'all, I got this neighbor, right? And he's building a pot plant right now. I'm scared to just cross the alley, if you will, and talk to my neighbor. Never mind, go to the ends of the earth, you know? Like, he obviously needs me to, like, build relationships, share with him. And I'm nervous talking to my next-door neighbor. Never mind going to the ends of the earth. So I just want to break that down. Like, just because you're a pastor doesn't mean that this stuff is, like, easy and automatic. And so I'm with you in trying to figure this out. One thing that's helped me is this. At the end of the book of Ephesians, the Apostle Paul asks the church of Ephesus to pray for him. And he specifically says this, would you pray for me that I would be bold in my sharing of the gospel? Now, there's a couple different ways you could read that, but I'll tell you the way I hear it. If the Apostle Paul needed to have prayer for boldness, it's okay for me to admit that I need to pray for the same thing, right? And I would pray to be bold in my being mission-focused or in sharing of my faith. Now, here's something I've learned. Invitation is powerful. That there's actually power in invitation, much like the video we just saw. Here's why. When we give an invite, what we're actually doing is we're offering something, right? But we're putting the power into the hands of someone else, okay? So an invitation is putting the power into the hands of someone else and giving them the freedom to move at the speed that they want to move, okay? So an invitation puts the power into the hands of someone else and allows them to move at the speed they want to move. I got a few different examples I want to share you as we get going. In my early 20s, I would often use invitation like this. I would say something along the lines of, over the course of dialogue and understanding someone's heart and what they're going through, I would say something like this. I would say, hey, you know, I don't really understand everything you're in the midst of, but one thing I know is that I have learned that it is super helpful for me to be connected to my local church to help me through what I'm facing. Would you like to come to me? Or come with me. And that was it. I would just put out an invitation to come to my local church with me. So, early 20s, I was actually coaching high school football at the time. And I was visiting with one of the coaches on the staff. And he started sharing his story with me. Telling me some of the things he's going through. And some of his struggles. And some of his hesitancy with church and with faith and figuring these things out. And so, I did just that. I said, hey, you know what? How about you come like and check out church with me? Like, I have found that this is really helpful in my journey. And guess what? He came. He actually came. And then he came again, and he came again. We still keep in contact today via social media. And long story short, like, he is now a man who loves Jesus and has put his faith in Jesus. And I only invited him to come to church with me when I was in my early 20s. That's all I did. But I put the power into his hands, and then I allowed him to move at a speed he was comfortable with. And that was sort of, at that stage of my life, how I went about being mission-focused. And then it kind of grew, and it changed me a little bit. And so I started moving from inviting someone to come to church with me, which I still do. And I moved in this place saying, hey, I hear what you're saying, and I can sense there's a lot of pain and struggle in that. Can you and me pray right now in this exact moment for what you're facing? And so now it's morphed into an invitation to church to an invitation to pray with someone. I'll tell you another story. So at that stage in life where this was kind of my means to being mission-focused or the sharing my faith part of being mission-focused, I was working out at a gym that trained mixed martial artists, and the particular guy I was working out with this day was training for a match, and he was working on his boxing, and so I was with him, and we were sparring. And there really is nothing like punching another guy in the face to softening his heart. It's just, there's like a connection with the brain and the heart. His brain softens, his heart softens. Like, seriously. So we're doing round one. We're sparring and doing our thing, right? Ding, the bell goes, and we have our recovery period. So I check in, like, hey, man, how's your week going? Like, what's going on? And he right away is like, oh, you're not going to believe this. It was one of the worst weeks of my life. My girlfriend left, and she took my son with me. And I'm just so broken inside right now. And he's talking to me about this. Then, ding, the bell goes. And so we keep boxing and doing our thing, right? And then, bing, it hits again. We're in recovery mode. I was like, oh, man, what day did that happen? Like, how did that all go down? And he starts sharing when it happened and how she left and what she was facing. And then, ding, the bell goes again. We go back and forth like this 4 or 5 times, right? And I'm like, all right, Jesus has clearly put me in this man's course for this day. And there's something going in his life that's big. And I need to process this with him, right? And so this is going to sound really creepy, but I made sure I was in the change room at the same time as him, right? Because when you're in recovery, you only got like a minute and a half, depending on, and that's just not enough time. So I made sure I was in the change room at the same time. And I was like, hey, man, I can't relate to everything you're facing, but I have found like my local church is really helpful to me. If you'd like to come, I would love to have you come to church with me, but hey, man, even right now, like, can we pray? I'll pray with you right now for what you're facing. And I hope this helps you, because here was his answer. He's like, no, thank you. Conversation was done. Now, you might think, oh, man, like, how did you feel? Did that, like, hurt? Was that, like, a stab in the back? Like, no, like, I felt so much peace in that moment. So much peace. Here's something I've learned over the years. That rarely does somebody come to faith in Jesus by losing an argument. Rarely. So I rarely head into situations where I try to win an argument or a debate to lead someone to Jesus. Because I actually only know of one person in all of history. Maybe there's more. I only know one person in all of history who lost the debate and then gave their life to Jesus. His name was William Wilberforce, which was huge. He went on to lead slave abolition, right? He literally lost the debate and was like, dang, I need to give my life to Jesus. And so he did. That doesn't really happen that often in our culture, does it? All right? So I don't try to win a debate. I still to this day believe that moment was brought to me by God. I took the opportunity. I opened up an invitation to invite and to pray with him, and he said, no, thank you. And that's okay. I did my job. There's times when you're going to offer an invitation and it won't be accepted. You'll hear a little bit more of that in just a moment. That's okay. It's okay. Our job is to be faithful and being a mission-focused people, right? Looking for those opportunities. I took the opportunity. The door didn't open. It is what it is. I'll tell you a second story where it did open. I was in the same gym. We were staying late that day, and I was visiting with a gentleman at the gym, and we were sitting on the couches out. And at this point, my journey and how I was mission-focused really shifted. And so I've moved now where I'm beyond just inviting someone to church and offering prayer. I now will do those things, but I'll often say, hey, can I tell you how Jesus has helped me with fill in the blank, whatever the conversation is. So that's kind of my go-to line. I now say, can I tell you how Jesus has helped me with? So we're on the couches. We're having a visit. He's opening up his heart. And I'm asking questions. And I want to be clear about this. I'm asking questions not because I wanted to like add one more to the kingdom. I'm asking questions because I genuinely care about this man. And I love him. And he still today has not yet put his faith in Jesus. But I'm certain he's going to. And that's a whole nother story, which I could tell another day. But nonetheless, we're sitting on these couches and he opens up his heart and he says, you know what? My wife and I are in the midst of a really awful divorce. And I just feel so empty and lonely. Here I am in my mid-40s and I got nothing. I've been working so hard and everything that I care about is gone, right? He's putting his heart out there. So I listen, ask questions, and I go through my lines, right? I'm like, you know what? Have you ever considered coming to a church? My church family has been really important with me. And, you know, I offer to pray and we even do some praying in the gym. And then I say this, can I share how Jesus has helped me in my marriage? And he goes, yeah. All right. Now the door is open, right? I don't have to win an argument because I presented an invitation and I asked him if it was okay for me to share my story. And he said, yeah. And so I go on to share how Jesus has shown me that the ultimate example of love is to offer yourself as a sacrifice for someone, and that Jesus did that for me at the cross and forgave me, and that I in turn need to offer myself as a sacrifice and to sacrificially love my wife. And that it was hilarious listening to him. He's like, whoa. Why didn't someone tell me about Jesus' love a long time ago? Maybe my marriage would still be together, right? Like, here is a guy who doesn't have faith in God at this point, and yet is talking about how Jesus' love could have changed or saved his marriage. Like, how awesome is that? Mission focused. I know it is not solely about sharing our faith, but there is power in invitation. Because invitation actually puts the power into their hands and allows them to move at the speed they would like to move. In the midst of all my meanderings here this morning, it's appropriate for us to turn to the book of Matthew. In Matthew chapter 28, we find, like, without a doubt, like, the best mission-focused passage. And I want us to look at it to be kind of, to be the anchoring focus for us this morning. So if you are a guest here or relatively new here and you don't have a Bible, I just want you to know there is a Bible in front of you, and we welcome you to take that, to use it. You can keep it if you need. And if you're using that Bible, the page number is 835. Or if you have the bigger version of that Bible, it's page 1062. So 835 or 1062. And this is Matthew 28. I'm going to read it for you. Then I'll process a couple more thoughts and tell you a few more stories. So here it goes. I'm going to start at verse 18. And Jesus came and said to them, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. This passage is subtitled The Great Commission. If you've been in church for a while, you will have heard this phrase, the Great Commission. It's a perfect passage for us. Co-mission. And we're talking about being mission-focused. A commission or a commission literally means to authorize someone to act on your behalf or to send someone on a mission on your behalf. And so here we have Jesus doing just that, authorizing his disciples to go on his behalf. The cool part of this, if you will, is Jesus starts like this. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Now, this is critical because if I ever stand up here and say, hey, Ford Alliance, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. You better run me on out of here, all right? He said, whoa, hold on, sir. Because Jesus starts this passage by communicating that he is God. He has all the authority in heaven and on earth. And the best part is that the disciples don't even blink an eye. They don't need to blink an eye because he's proved it. This comes after Jesus' death. He goes to the cross, and at the cross, Jesus has taken on all the world's, all mine, all of your sin, all of your shame, all of your regret, all of those things in our life that have kept us from relation with God. He has taken them on. He has overcome sin. He's brought freedom from sin. He's brought forgiveness for sin. In the process of doing so, he has shamed the rulers and the authorities in the unseen world. He has done this massive, massive work on our behalf, was buried in the grave, and then rose again. He proved it. He proved beyond a shadow of a doubt. He really is who he said he was. And so he can say, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me, because he is the living, the active God. And he has the authority to make the claims he is making right now. And so he adds, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. Let's start with this word go. I've often heard this spoken of as a command, and it is a command in a sense, but it is so much more than a command, because a command can be broken, right? This word go, though, in its original meaning, in its original language, is a contemporary participle, meaning that this word go, therefore, is describing an action that is happening within it. Or it's describing an action in the midst of a main action. So the action that's happening within, or the main action, is the making of disciples. And the go is really like this implied assumption that is happening within Jesus' disciples. So I will never forget my New Testament professor suggesting it should be or could be read like this: as you are going, make disciples. As you were going, wherever you're at in life, whatever stage you're at, whatever place you're at, as you are at home, or as you are at school, or as you are at work, or as you travel, whatever you're doing, as you are going, make disciples. Now, this phrase then that we're going to take, the making of disciples, as a phrase that can be a little bit scary. It's a phrase that can really be a bit intimidating, if I will. I've often heard this phrase in my past and thought, go and make disciples. So go and make the 12 disciples. And I can't do that. I'm not a disciple maker. That's not for me. I can't do it. But Jesus is saying something here that's really important. As you were going, make disciples. So here's what this means. This isn't just a call for pastors. This is a call for all those people. And that all those people in the midst of our going, we are to be all about making disciples or being mission focused. And so perhaps one of the more pointed thoughts I want to bring out this morning is this. Are you a Christian? Or are you a follower of Jesus? I mean, it is done in the work of the cross, and we can answer simple yes or no. But is there evidence? If I said, are you a Christian or are you a follower of Jesus? Can you answer, I'm a disciple maker? That point like grips me. It convicts me. And I already said, I don't have all of this completely figured out or mastered, but nonetheless, am I a disciple maker? Or am I a maker of disciples? I want to be that. I want to be a mission-focused man who is a maker of disciples. And there's things in my journey that have kind of helped take the edge off the scariness of this phrase. I want to share them with you. Here's the first one. Let me preface it with this. The phrase, making disciples, is the best translation for us, okay? So I'm not suggesting a better translation here. I'm just saying it is the best translation, but The root of this word, making disciples, is the word learn. This helped me because I was able to separate like making the 12 disciples into, am I making learners of Jesus? That took the edge off for me when I initially heard that. Now, I know it is so much more than just being a learner because it can be just head knowledge and we want more than just head knowledge. We want heart, right? But when I thought of it like that, am I helping people become learners of Jesus? It took a bit of the edge of the scariness off that for me. Second two things that helped me is sort of the splitting of the phrases making or make and disciples. And so let's consider that. Like to make is to kind of what I've already been talking about, the reaching out, the sharing of our faith, the communicating the goodness of God and his love for us and for others. Oftentimes we refer to that as evangelism. Doesn't have to be that word, but that's sometimes what we refer it to. I will never forget a sermon that I heard when it comes to sharing our faith. And it was based on Matthew chapter 13. I'm going to read it for you. If you want to turn there, you can, but you don't have to. And I want to preface this too. I have forgotten a lot of sermons that I've heard, as have you. And you don't have to feel guilty. We're in the same boat, all right? It's just happened, okay? It is what it is. So when you remember a sermon, you know, like for years, like that says something, right? Like that was a good sermon, right? This is something I have remembered for years. I'm never going to forget it. It comes from Matthew 13. Let me read the parable of Jesus and then the response and unpack it real quick. So here Jesus is speaking. He says this, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, and they did not have much soil. And immediately they sprang up, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched. And since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and produced grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears, let him hear. Jesus doesn't always give us the explanation of his parables, but this one he does. It's good. A couple of verses later in verse 18, just as a help understand, he refers to the seed as the word of the kingdom or the message of who Jesus is or the gospel, as we might call it, okay? Here it is, the explanation, a couple of verses later. Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is what was sown along the path. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a while. And when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately he falls away. As for what is sown among the thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. As for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit and yields in one case 100-fold and another 60 and another 30. Now he goes on to unpack that the word is the seed and it's the message of the kingdom of God. And for some, it's received quickly and then the roots fail. And for others, it's choked away by the things of the world. For others, it's not even understood. But for some, it takes root and it produces a crop. Now, I have visited with a number of believers, and I've had believers share with me their hesitancy to the make part of making disciples, to the hesitancy to reach out or to share their faith. And I've even had people say, you know, like, I've never actually done that, and I'm nervous to do that, and I'm not sure what's happening. And then I've had others say to me, well, how come I'm not seeing people come to faith? I've heard this passage used as a passage to debate things like eternal security and all these other theological thoughts, which is fine and fun to do. But when I heard a pastor speak on this and put this in the simplest of terms, it will never, I'll never forget how he said it. He said, if you really want to see more people come to faith, you'll just start throwing more seed. And 3 out of 4 ain't going to land. And that's okay. But when it does, it produces a harvest. 100-fold, 60-fold, 30-fold. And sometimes we overcomplicate texts and passages, in my opinion. And in reality, what we ought to be about is just a people who will start throwing more seed. A people who will start sending out more invitation, if you will. If we want to see people come to faith, throw seed. If you want to have the opportunity to share your faith, throw seed. If you want to, for the first time, share the love of God, you got to throw seed. Meaning you got to start with an invitation. Putting it out there and giving them the chance. Make disciples means to throw seed. But then there's the disciple part of this passage. The disciple part of it is to take them from just being a learner to perhaps a doer, or to go beyond just understanding, but to becoming a follower. I really like the word mentor. You know, like when I use the word mentor, it's not as scary as making disciples, for me at least. Mentoring others. And the reality is that every single one of us in this room have the capacity to mentor someone, because there's someone in our circle who could be benefited by the knowledge or the experience that we have, right? I was having a visit. This is brand new, what I'm about to share with you. In fact, I was planning on sharing this with the elders on Wednesday, because that's our elders meeting this month. But I'm going to share it to you first, and then they can figure this all out later. So you're like in the know right now, all right? Like you're getting like firsthand Ken thought before even the elders are. So there you go. I was at prayer retreat, and I was listening to Brent Trask, our district superintendent, share. And he was sharing, and it went like this. He said, if I could have a redo, I would do so many things different as a pastor. So many things. And he went on to like share of kind of some of the story of what he feels he didn't do the right way. And it was from his heart, and he was processing what he was going on. And so my mind started spinning and wanting to learn more. So I sat him down. I said, hey, Brent, you got like 10, 15 minutes? I really want to visit with you and unpack what you were saying a little further. And so I said this. I said, first, Brent, I want you to know this. I really think you're being too hard on yourself. You did some great things in your time in ministry, and so don't belittle what you did. God was using you in the midst of you doing your best. And so I wanted to preface that conversation with that. But then I said this, what would you do? Like if you could go back and redo do it as a young pastor, what would you do differently today that you wish you could have done then? And he said something that has my wheels spinning, and it has to do with this. And I don't yet have all the answers, but nonetheless, I think it's worth sharing. He said this. He said, Ken, while I was in ministry as a pastor, I focused and put all my energy onto building the biggest church. And if I could do it all over again, I instead would focus on building the smallest church. And then he paused, like good preachers do, right? And he said, what I mean is, as I focused on building the biggest church, there were only certain people who could help me with certain things. And we did our best, but there was always a ceiling. There was always a limit in where we could go with that. But if I could redo it, I would focus on building the smallest church, because then I could release every single person in our congregation or in my congregation to be a part of the mission. Because no matter what their experience, no matter where they were at in their walk, there would be a way for them to be a part of the mission. I thought that was good. I would focus not on building the biggest church, but on building the smallest. And I'm convinced that that has something to do with what Jesus is saying when he says, as you were going, every single one of us who know him, as we are going, make disciples. It's a call for every single one of us. The being mission focused is not a pastor job or a staff job or an elder job. It's the Church of Jesus job. And perhaps one of my stories may have landed, but if not, that's fine, because I have the greatest conclusion in the history of conclusions for you right now. This was worth the price of admission, all right? There wasn't a price of admission. I'm just being silly. Sorry. I'm going to invite our big sister in the faith, Noni, up, actually. And she's going to join me right now and help us process and understand this go and make disciples in a way I can't, in a far better way. She knows everything I'm about to share, so this isn't going to surprise Noni. We've practiced and we've processed and what have you. But when you're a new pastor, you get to have the privilege of getting to know people and their story and what have you. And so Janelle and I were having pie and tea with Noni, and we're just visiting, getting to know her. And Janelle asked perhaps the obvious question, like, Noni, what do you love to do? Like, do you like to crochet or do you knit? Like, tell me, what are your hobbies? And Noni looks at her and says, no, I don't like to do that. She says, I like to go to prison. Now, I had already known from my visit that she was not going as a prisoner. This is a lovely, lovely lady. And so I knew right away what she meant. She meant that she loves to go and do prison ministry. And the things that she shared with me, not only blessed my soul, but like motivated me to be a better man, if you will. And so I want her to share some of her story to help motivate you, if you will. And so, So Noni, can you actually, let's just go right to the beginning. Tell us about how you first got involved or felt called into prison ministry.
Okay. A lady by the name of Donna Mitchell from Connecting Streams came out to the church to speak about the prison ministry and to try to recruit people to get involved. And when she was talking about the ministry itself and the inmates, I had just an overwhelming, I don't know what to call it, I believe it was the Holy Spirit, but I had such an overwhelming feeling inside. I felt like I was exploding from the inside out. And I don't even think I was thinking anymore at that time, so much as I was feeling this. And I felt that I was to get involved. Most people that know me would know that would be the last thing I would get involved in. But in this case, I didn't talk to Donna on the Sunday, but on Monday, I was kind of waffling back and forth. As every minute went by, I thought, I can get out of this still. I haven't talked to her. But I knew that I had to do something about it because I still had this feeling inside of me that wouldn't go away. So I called Donna, and she set up appointments with the two of us for me to get involved in. I had to go and have several meetings with Connecting Streams over a two-month period and with the prison to be secured to get into the prison and be able to work in there. So this is basically what went on in that time. Now, I was afraid, but I was also reading a devotional book called Jesus Calling. And it happened that God used that book to take away my fear and to give me peace, because almost every day it either said, I'm with you, take my hand, go step by step. There was something, and it wasn't just words like I'm saying. It had power to it. So anyway, I had all kinds of peace. And then I went into the prison, and the women came in. I had no fear whatsoever. I felt, you know, I just felt really comfortable with them. And we have them sit in, they sign in, and then we have them sit. We get into circles with two team members in, per circle, and we ask them to go around the circle and give their first name and one thing that they're grateful for. Well, believe it or not, we got some of the prisoners said they were grateful for the prison, for being in prison. They felt safe, and they didn't have the police or pimps or whoever or whatever they were involved in. They didn't have them to worry about them behind their back or knifing them or shooting them or whatever. So prison was a safe place for them. During these conversations, a lot of the girls started opening up about different things. After we got through that, one of the main things we have is a book called The Key to Your Expected End. This book was written by a former prisoner who was the worst of the worst. She wasn't afraid of anyone. She wasn't afraid to do anything. And she ended up in prison. And because of how she was, she also treated the guards, or tried to treat the guards and anyone in her way, like she did when she was out on the streets. She got to the point where she said, "This isn't working for me. The guards are horrible. I'm getting in, being put in isolation, and it's getting going from bad to worse." So as she was talking to herself about this, the word pray came to her. So she prayed. And as she prayed, all the garbage, all the hate, all the anger, all the fear, everything inside her came out. And she saw a guard coming down the hall. And she thought, well, now I can put on my nice voice, because she was turning a little bit nice. I can put on my nice voice. And she asked the guard for a Bible. And because the guards all hated her anyway, whether they had a Bible or not, they would never have given her one. And the guard said, "No, not in your life." Well, the next morning she went to put her dirty laundry in the laundry basket hamper, and normally the laundry hamper would be full. When she got there, the laundry hamper was empty, and there was a Bible in the bottom. She got this Bible, and she started to read from cover to cover several times, over and over and over. She realized that the Israelites were put into captivity when they disobeyed God, and she likened it to the prisoners. When they disobey God, they go into captivity. And she started a Bible study, and she was to be in there for 13 years, and she ended up getting out She didn't spend any of the 13 years in there because she did look to God. She accepted God, Jesus. She followed God. And when she got out, she started to publish these books and started a foundation to give all of these books to prisoners free of charge. That's about that on that. That book is just full of miraculous things, but I don't have time. But one thing, if I could take a minute, there, that I didn't mention earlier, another thing that we do with them is called the Father's Love Letter. And it's quite long. And we go around a circle and we take turns reading. And when we do, I'm not going to read it. When we do, we go around reading it, and so when we do, at the end, we ask the girls, is there anything in particular that's hit you? And they all seem to come up with something. Now, these verses are scripture verses from the Bible, and all have the scriptures after them. So we made that clear to the girls that this is from the Bible.
Perfect. So this is something you can visit with Noni after the service. Her heart is so beautiful in this. But I have something that one more question I want to ask her, and it's the thing that just had most convicted me. And so Noni, can you just tell us like why you keep going back, or what you enjoy most about going to the prison?
I enjoy the women. I enjoy the inmates. You start to get closer to them as you hear them speak and tell you their story. And you see the tears, and you see the desire that they do want to do better. We've had girls who are getting out who cry because they're afraid. When they get out, they'll go back on drugs. Their pimps are waiting for them when they get out. We've had women who cry because I had two women crying. Or one woman was getting out, and she had been a real support to the other woman. And the other woman said, I don't want to lose you as my friend. And there can be so much emotion. And the women were able to pray with them and say the salvation prayer. It's a privilege just to be able to go in and visit with them and share with them and tell them about Jesus. And when we leave, in most parts, the women will come up to us and thank us for going there when we should be thanking them. And they'll thank us, and many times they'll want a hug. And as I say, there is so much more I could say, but there, you just begin to love them. You know, God gives you that love.
And I'll invite the worship team back up. And that's the note I want us to end on. Being mission focused is so much more than just one more thing to check off. It's an act of love. And when I heard Noni speak to me the first time about these women she works with, like I could just, and I hope you saw it and you heard it, like it's in her voice, like she genuinely loves these ladies. One of the things she said to me is, I could see them as my neighbor. And this is the compelling part of being a mission-focused people. When Jesus says, go therefore, or as you are going, make disciples, as scary or as overwhelming as that can feel, it really is to be driven by the Father's love. And because He first loved us, we too want to be an extension of that love. And I think Noni, for all of us, for me especially, serves as an incredible example to just put my boots on and get going, you know what I mean? As a man who's been sent out on a mission of love. Because that's what being a mission-focused people is. This is the people who are sent on a mission of love.
Please stand and sing with us.